The first 4 hours were simply an amuse-bouche.
I'm stuffed. I can't remember the last time I ate this much.
Sure you don't want no dessert?
Not for me.
I'm good.
Your table is ready for Carmen and Lima's emerging podcast scene.
Hello.
That's how I realized I'm never going to get famous or rich doing this.
This podcast?
Well, we already know that. Wow. Doing the media stuff. When I talk to classes, and I find that I'm just as guilty of the stuff that I preach. When I've talked to journalism classes, what comes up all the time is the difference between doing TV, doing radio play-by-play, or doing radio talk shows. And I said, well, the biggest difference to me is there's a lot of guys that try to do everything, and then they find out what's in their wheelhouse. Like, there's a bunch of TV guys, Kenny, that come to the realization pretty quickly that between them and their friends, they have opinions on sports. Mm. But if you put them on the radio every day, they just don't care enough.
TV guys.
Yeah.
Big time.
They just don't care enough and are not as opinionated as they thought they were. Because to do a radio show, you have to have opinions. And people we get accused of, everybody in the radio business at some point gets accused of faking opinions or using them with effect, getting loud, getting obnoxious, everything's embarrassing, fire this coach, fire this GM.
Yeah, I got blocked today by a guy because he wrote, because I tweeted, and I did not bring it up on the show, because there's been several people who have tweeted like, hey, you know, the Cavs are this record without Darius Garland.
9-0. They're 9-0 now.
Would he be the guy? And it was the last guy to do it. I don't want to see people go through my mentions and go, who's the guy? The last guy to do it, I think, was being very innocent. Mm-hmm. But there were people kind of wondering.
It was Dave Chidowski.
And things are going very well for the Cavs right now.
You can't just do that.
That nobody's doing like with sincerity. But at the beginning of the year, because I think there's some people going, well, wait a minute. You guys all say that Jared Allen would be the piece to go if you were to make a move someday down the line. What about? And I'm like, no, we're way too early on both of those. Mm-hmm. But but some guy tweeted at me. And he used the term faux and straw man. I go, you might want to use gaslighting in the next tweet.
Yeah,
and
I'm all like, the terminology.
All right, well, I get my first block of 2024. That's great. But I'm like, I didn't bring that up on the air. Man, I'm not bringing that up on the show.
So what I'm getting at is I tell these journalism classes, and I always will say something that happened the night before. When I talk to Syracuse, I've talked to Ohio University, I've talked to John Carroll, I've talked to high schools.
You went to a lot of schools.
I'm just in talking to the classes. Oh. And I'll say something that happened topically, something that happened the night before. Hey, what'd you think of that decision by Tito? What did you think of Jim Boeheim and what he said here? And then I go, if none of you are putting your hands up, if none of you think anything about this, then you probably need to just do television. You probably need to do... I said you can't do a radio show. You can't do a radio show if you don't have an opinion on the big thing that happened last night.
And you don't want me to...
Well, what I'm getting to is,
you know what I mean?
I just realized I can't do first take, and I've a lot of big opinions on a lot of stuff. I've been accused of faking big opinions all the time. Lima, you can't possibly believe this. I got a lot of that when I was saying what I said about Baker Mayfield.
Sorry,
rough day. Mm. When I said what I said about Baker Mayfield, I had a lot of people accuse me of having fake opinions. Well, what has everybody talked about over the last 48 hours? What did Garrett Bush, who we had on today, go viral talking about? The NFL's handling of the Bengals and the Bills game.
Mm-hmm.
I realized with this, Garrett has a million views on TikTok. He has 25,000 views and growing. It got shared by everybody I follow, nationally, locally, everything. I don't think I could do that job because the producers of First Take or Undisputed or whatever Nick Wright's new show is, seems to have a new one every month. Whatever those shows that I would be asked to be on, I would tell my producer, yeah, I don't feel real strongly about what they did. I thought they might play the game, and then Joe Burrow was warming up, Joe Buck said it, and then they didn't play the game. I don't have 3 hours to devote to arguing.
Well, what I liked about what Garrett said is... I heard what he said, and I agree with what he says about it. There was a little bit of, well, however, this and that, But then when I watched it again, I went, okay, no, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad I watched it twice. I watched it twice. Because I agreed with what Garrett said. But the whole issue that I think that I take with those sort of things is that when you're in an opinion business, as that genre is, where it's you're out there on a stage and you have to just have an argument, who's going to argue about a man nearly dying on a football field? So now you have to sound like an ass. Like, I got Bart Scott blaming T. Higgins. What are you talking about blaming T. Higgins?
Yeah, saw that.
What are you doing blaming T. Higgins? And then the Skip Bayless tweet. Now, we could talk. I didn't want to talk about it on the radio because I just hate doing, hey, here's this totally other show on a totally different thing. Let's talk about their opinions instead of our own. But I'll do it on the podcast because it's the podcast.
Sure.
The podcast is a look behind. Remind me what I texted to Garrett after the interview.
I was curious what you thought about Skip. Because I had
what
opinions.
I thought of Skip, I think Skip's history is what got him in trouble. I think Skip's history is what got him what got people going after him.
Conclusions because, being jumped to.
Yes. Yeah. Because if I wrote that, or Owen wrote that, I think some people would read it the wrong way, but I think a lot more people would be understanding. Now, we're obviously small potatoes in comparison to Skip Bayless and in the platform that he has, obviously. But, I mean, you saw people, and I read, I go, okay, if I read the context and I read it in my voice, he is saying he hopes that the guy's okay,
yeah.
But he's also saying, what is the NFL going to do? Which, it's a trite thing to say. What he did, he made a mistake. He said something pretty trite at the wrong time. He made a mistake. But it was his history that got him hammered so badly by everybody who takes
and
that
And he's in. Earned that. He has earned
and
that.
And he's earned that.
And he'd probably say, yeah, it's worked out for him. That even though he's going to get crushed like that.
And that's where I look at it, I go,
he is the one guy. Do you know how many times I've actually woken up like after a LeBron performance, and I don't really watch Skip. As far as Skip goes, like I've seen him in public at the Super Bowl. I've seen him at other big events doing shows mm-hmm. outside, and I've mm-hmm. seen the crowd. And I'm like, boy, Twitter doesn't see this. These people are pumped to see Skip Bayless. They are pumped.
Yeah.
They are using this as a show. They don't really take it seriously. They are enjoying themselves. Yeah. But Twitter is like, how can he be a grifter to this level? How can he? And I'm like, guys, this is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it doesn't matter who's right or wrong about arguments.
That's what made me. And there was a time where I had to think about it as well. Because, again, I didn't like seeing from even your brother, sister stations, cousin stations, whatever. So-and-so in the afternoon. So-and-so in the morning. So-and-so in the midday. Talk about Skip and Shannon and da-da-da-da-da. It's like, talk about your show.
Yeah, we like to talk about your show. Yes.
I hated that when I told Lima this, and Lima totally agreed with me. We made a conscious decision because I think you said it out loud first, but I mean, I was not liking it, and you weren't liking it. When Baker Mayfield first got drafted, there were people who wanted to turn the thing into a Colin Cowherd clip show. And I'm like, man, those are his opinions, and I said it all the time. That guy is not on the airwaves here. He's in doctor's offices. When you go to a dentist or a doctor or a waiting room getting your tires rotated, that's where he's on. And he makes. And I don't have any problem with Colin Cowherd. I've been a fan of Colin Cowherd my entire life. The guy's been on the radio, so I have no problem with the guy. I'm not going to sit there and turn my show into reactions of other hosts.
Yeah, I think it's a big mistake.
I'm not going to do it.
That's a big mistake that a lot of shows do.
But the podcast, on this podcast, I'll say this. What I think they've done is they've blurred it of what's real and what's not. Because I sit there and I think, I did think about this for a moment. The Skip Bayless Shannon Sharp thing. Shannon Sharp took the day off on Tuesday. But I don't know what the reason was. I saw the clip, the awkward clip. And then he tried to explain himself. Skip cut him off. It got very awkward very quickly. And you and I love awkward and we love confrontations. But you and I have a very different relationship than a lot of others, where you and I have been mad at each other off the air less than a handful of times and never for more than 10 minutes, if that. And I wonder if they could be the same way. But I also think Shannon Sharp is not, like, I go, well, they all make more money in the end. Shannon being outraged by Skip Bayless and Skip Bayless being indignant over Shannon Sharpe not being able to believe him makes them more money in the end, brings them more eyeballs in the end. But I go, Shannon Sharpe doesn't need that money. I go, Skip Bayless doesn't even need that money anymore. So maybe it is personal for him, but the disbelief is part of the conversation now. And what they've done, they've created their own circle, their own conversation out of something that is really, I mean, it was almost tragic. We'll find out how the results go with this poor fella, and we'll see how that goes. But I look at it and go, a lot of things turn into outrage. And I just didn't want to turn DeMar Hamlin into outrage. Like, when I first saw the reactions to, why is the NFL talking about 5 minutes to go? What do we do? Hold on. Hold on. People were mad at Joe Buck. People were mad at Troy Vincent. Because Troy Vincent said he had not heard of it. And then they go, well, that's a lie. That's a lie then. They were saying 5 minutes and Joe Buck's here. You think Troy Vincent's going to go out there as a representative of the NFL with billions of dollars on the line and go, hey, it was Brenda Smith who was telling Joe Buck in his ear that there was going to be 5 minutes and then they were going to resume play? Because nobody had been in that situation before, and there, for all we know, there could have been a producer in that truck going, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. Okay, guys, 5 minutes. They're warming up on the field. We see Joe Burrow. 5 minutes, we're going to get it going. Joe, 5 minutes. Oh, 5 minutes, we're going to play
again.
And
that has been the protocol before.
And that has been the protocol before. So people only go with what they know. And I don't want to... Go ahead.
Well, just from a logistics and TV standpoint, I don't think people realize that it's not the referee's call when they take their TV timeout. There's a TV person that's saying, hey, we've got a TV timeout to get in here from the network.
Then they literally stand on the field at the...
They wear big orange gloves
at the end of the break. They literally will not leave the field, so you can't play the game until they're off the field.
Exactly. Right. So they don't... I don't know if they knew what they were doing at the time. I don't know if anybody knew what they were doing at the
time. Nobody knew because this doesn't happen.
So guys, like, it takes a little bit of understanding of this being a... This isn't a normal, hey, he can't... We don't know if he can feel his fingers and toes. It is not that normal.
Right.
Sad to say normal. I hate to say it like that, but you get what I'm saying. It's not that type of thing.
But that's at least been done a few times in the past.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's guys carted off the field all the time.
Right.
They wait. They pray. Teams sometimes get together and pray. And then guess what? Second down and six.
Yep.
Here we go. Play the game. And listen, what Skip tweeted, I mean, I'm sorry. Every Cincinnati fan who... is going to be concerned about the well-being of a player, just like we all are, but they don't know the player, and it's not a famous player, which we can act like that shouldn't matter. It does. If it was Josh Allen,
correct.
If it was Joe Burrow, if it was Jamar Chase, then okay, there might be even a different kind of empathy, unfortunately, but they didn't know who that guy was. They are in the fight for their life. I'm sorry for the parlance. I'm using the wrong terminology, but you get what I'm saying. Down at the end of the season, it's what every...
Fight for position.
Every fan jockeying for position. It's what every fan is thinking about. And so today, what is everybody talking about? Whether or not the NFL is going to get this game in. Well, it stands to reason that people were thinking about it that day, too. And when we had... We had, from Cincinnati...
Mo Egger
on, and I said, Mo, are you allowed to talk about the ramifications of playing the game versus not playing the game going forward? Are you just going to get yelled at? And he said, I'll probably get yelled at, but it's my job. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It is our job. Whether Skip should have tweeted it the minute it happened.
That's
okay. What if it were 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later? I think we're all rushing to get angry about something that night because we can't wrap our heads around this happening while everybody's watching. How many people were watching with their kids? And all of a sudden, there's a player that was running down the field to make an athletic play. And the next thing you know, not only might he not never play again, we don't know if he's going to live again.
What type of lifestyle he could have.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems that the news is getting better and better, but I don't know. I mean, it was a long time. I don't know what type of lifestyle, quality of life he's going to have. So, you know, we hope he's going to be better, obviously. But, you know, again, we say these things. We just, you know, I did that show on Tuesday with you, and I'm going... I was looking at social media. I'm going,
we knew it would be a weird show.
I'm just not going to step in it over anything here.
Yep.
And I'll be damned. I saw some of the texts we were getting and some of the other stuff, and I'm going, I'll be damned if I stepping it over this. And you could say, because I didn't think there was, what was the take? What was the opinion? The NFL.
The big bad NFL.
The NFL, but the NFL stopped the game.
They stopped the game. So they because the game. They stopped it a half hour later or 10 minutes later than they should.
But they didn't play another play.
That's the outrage.
It wasn't like they played another play and then went, guys, we really don't think we should.
And there's no doubt. There's no doubt that the NFL, which we said during the Deshaun Watson thing, during the Ray Rice thing, during the nonstop negotiations between the players union, every time there's been a big NFL story, we know what they're doing. They're taking the temperature. They're taking the temperature of the fans. And what I always said about like the Watson thing, I'm like, guys, Deshaun Watson, that is, I always use the Good Morning America barometer, which is, will the story land on Good Morning America? Why do I say that? Because Good Morning America is not a sports show. Public. It's a general public that my wife would watch. And if my wife is talking about this, you've stepped in it.
Yeah.
And with this, the NFL was going to step in it no matter what, because this was going to be on Good Morning America. And sure enough, by the way, it was on Good Morning America.
Oh, they were showing CPR stuff today on Good Morning America. They were showing how to do it.
People were at high schools, media people were at high schools, making sure to show the
defibrillator.
The defibrillator device. Like, this then becomes a story, and so now you're going to get even more opinions because this is the time to strike when it comes to, like, let's say you're the players' union and safety is number one to you, and you want to make sure the NFL, who has increased the amount of games, you're all making more money, but they've increased the amount of games. They have failed to distance the games.
What?
Teams have to play sometimes twice in 4 days.
And I wanted to know from Garrett's conversation. What is in the CBA? I'd like to know from somebody, whether it be Charlie Hewlett, whoever, about life-altering injury that happens on the field. Because I swear I saw a report yesterday, and I kind of danced around it today because I was like, I can't confirm this, that they said the Bills or somebody said they were going to guarantee his pension no matter what, which is the right thing to do. You know, given the circumstances, even though, by the way, they cut Xavier Rhodes yesterday. So, like, the business of the NFL still goes on.
Absolutely.
But it's the right thing to do. But I go, what is written in the CBA about life-altering injury on the field?
You know,
it happened during work. It happened in the workplace. No matter what they want to say, this is something that happened at the workplace. So is there special dispensation for his pension?
I don't know. It's a good question.
And what does that open up for other guys who, you know, God forbid, other guys who might have had other injuries, other things?
And weren't as high profile.
Has Olivier Vernon ever played a down of football again ever since that injury with the Cleveland Browns?
And can he walk down the steps?
Exactly.
Can he locate his remote and sit down without being in pain and turn on a television?
Olivier was a vested player who had a pension. That is all true. So, but I'm saying, do you have a case now? Like, that's something that the NFL is going to have to pay attention to. Because the Bills can do it out of their own, quote-unquote, goodwill and say, hey, we're going to take care of DeMar Hamlin because the eyes of the world are on the Buffalo Bills.
So, unfortunately, and such is life, this isn't just the NFL. But when there is a story with this many eyes, that is how you get things done. That's when you get things done. When people always say, hey, now is not the time to politicize this event. Now is not the time to talk about the CBA. I would argue this is exactly the time that you talk about
it. Can we wait 48 hours on those things? Because that, I think, is the problem with the Skip Bayless thing.
But see, 48 hours, it's already out of the window. Are people going to care about this Buffalo Bills player by tomorrow?
It's been 48 hours, and they still do. And I think that was, going back to Skip Bayless, that was the problem. It was the guy everybody expected to tweet it or say it, said it at the exact time they thought he was going to say it, which is the wrong time. And so they jumped on him.
Even though millions of other people were thinking same thing.
And he couched a sentiment that was a nice thing with a trite commentary. But there were people, what's this going to do to my gambling? What's this going to do to my
fantasy league? It's championship weekend.
And it's like, well, we'll worry about that later on. Let's just make sure this guy's okay. Like, let's do that. Because there's certain things that you think in the back of your head, you can't help but do it. You don't say it. And he said it out loud. And I have no sympathy for Skip Bayless.
Oh, no. And that's not what I'm saying.
And I know
you
don't. I know we're not trying to build up a sorry for the guy.
He doesn't need us. He can walk away tomorrow. If he got canceled.
Frankly, to hell with him. I don't
care. In fact, if he got canceled, he would start a podcast the next day. He'd be even more successful.
I don't care. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But, well, that was an interesting way to start the podcast. I didn't know you were going to start the podcast with
it. It was the realization that I can't do this for a living.
What, be a radio host?
If I don't have opinions on the biggest story in the world, then I don't know that I can do this for a living.
I think you could. I think you would be able to do it.
Well, you just have to change what you need for a living.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you'd be able to do it. I think what I'll commend Garrett, because I think a lot of people who have hearts stepped out there and did the right thing.
But
on Tuesday.
The next question is, all those people that were saying such great things, there was such a for once on Twitter, there was like a unified reaction to what had happened.
Oh, there was
for the most part.
Some of the people I saw.
For the most part, it was like 99%. Ugh. For the most part, it was all, it obviously the other 0.1%, it gets highlighted.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
But for once, Twitter had really nice things to say about a kid, and they learned a lot about a kid. And they all donated to his cause, which was what an insanely good story. But if tomorrow there was a vote, like, should all the NFL contracts be guaranteed? Every last one of them. I bet you a lot of fans would say, no, don't want that. No, don't want my team. Like, you don't really care. You don't really care about these kids when you don't know them. You only care when this kid almost passed away on the football field when you were watching.
You can have guaranteed salaries. You're going to drive down salaries. Somehow. I mean, that's just going to drive the salary down. I'll guarantee you, but instead of getting a guaranteed $800,000.
Has it done that
in
the NBA?
The NBA still has less players. I mean, you're talking about a 53-man roster, and I know there's two-way contracts, and guys get called up for 10-day contracts, things like that. But in the NFL, I mean, you got guys on practice squads, and they make sort of, and I don't know how it all works. I don't. But you have guys who start out Browns camp, and they get cut at the end of a training camp. And
they're staying in an apartment.
And they somehow end up in that locker room on game day 7-8 times a year. It's crazy.
Introducing themselves to Myles Garrett.
Or they know each other. They're on the practice squad. They get called up. I mean, good God, there's been – I can't tell you how many linebackers over the last couple of years.
That's true.
I mean
– who was the offensive lineman who had to introduce himself?
Blake Hantz.
Yeah, Blake Hantz. That was the one.
So you have these guys, like, you can guarantee them as a contractor, because that's what they are. I mean, they're basically, in a lot of ways, independent contractors. They're paying, remember, you got to pay. Jeff Saturday, oddly enough, Jeff Saturday sued because of the taxes he had to pay in the city of Cleveland, which I don't think it was a game he was playing in, because he said he didn't actually perform the work in the NFL, and I think I want to say how it went. I'm not sure.
I forgot about that.
The city of Cleveland said, well, you got paid for the work. And he goes, I wasn't there. Because they get taxed.
They do. On their road games.
People don't know this. Players get taxed on the road games in the cities that they're in. Right. That's why they all need a tax guy. It's a very convoluted system.
Because they're all independent contractors at the end of the day.
Because everybody says, oh, Uncle Sam's, and I always say, the house always wins. And the house is the U.S. government. It's just the same thing with the stuff we started talking about here in this state here just a couple of days ago. The house always wins. But for those guys, how do you guarantee their contract? How do you do that? And if I do guarantee their contract,
What are the ramifications to the cap?
I'm going to end up having to drive your salary down. Yeah. Instead of $800,000, what do I guarantee you now? And when we say guaranteed salaries in the NBA, we all tell the story. Like, how do the contracts work in the NBA with two-way, with 10-day, with Dante Jones? Like, remember that story? Dante Jones and the low blow, and LeBron was going to pay for the fine.
Because he actually owed more money than he had made that year?
But we always say, guaranteed contracts. And we're like, yo, those contracts are guaranteed. Well, who are they guaranteed for? Like, how does that work? I don't know. I don't know. They do. And they're the lawyers that have to do that. So I think that this is something, the DeMar Hamlin thing, the problem is you want labor peace. You have labor peace for so long. We have another, 8 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just looked up trying to find out stuff about what he can, you know, going forward, if he doesn't play football again, what he can get.
Okay.
So the only comparison I saw, Schefter had a tweet, this was last year when Edelman retired, and because Edelman had an injury that essentially ended his career, but this was specifically it ended his season, and he was still under contract for the next season, Edelman could get up to $2 million. So you can get whatever you're guaranteed up to $2 million. So he was guaranteed over that. But DeMar Hamlin is not guaranteed that much money. DeMar Hamlin's contract is not, it's only 3.6 for 4 years total. So I don't, you know, obviously the Bills, if they choose to, people mentioned Ryan Shazier and his injury and how Pittsburgh kept him on the roster for 3 years.
But it was only because it was Ryan Shazier. Would they have done that for anybody else? I don't know. Probably not. Guys get injured all the time.
I mean, if this, I just don't want, again, it doesn't seem like the right time to bring up some of these other things either. It still
seems really, even as I was looking, I looked up that first thing about Edelman, and then I go, well, what's Hamlin make? And I looked that up, and as I'm looking at it, I'm like,
you felt bad about
this
it?
This is slimy.
I did the same thing.
This is
I got to be honest.
Right here.
You start looking at look at
the
things,
guys laying
the Bills
in a
just
bed,
the Bills released a statement during the podcast. Like, he's made remarkable progress. We continue to monitor him. He's not out of the woods yet, but he's making great. And it's like, okay, great. So at some point, yeah, we're going to have to talk about this, but we can't be naive here and think that this situation will not be brought up in the future in a negotiation for the next CBA.
Sure.
And maybe even across sports, because we're talking about something here that can happen in baseball. I'm
amazed
sure you can run into each other at a hard clip in basketball.
I am honestly amazed we have not had more of this, especially in boxing and in the UFC. I can't believe we haven't had more of this, which speaks to also how these guys are elite athletes. They know how to protect themselves, and the resources are there on the scene to make sure that guys are good. You know, UFC's not as barbaric as it was 25 years ago, 30 years ago, when guys didn't have gloves on. They could, lack of a better term, they could literally punch you in the nuts in some states.
The I hate to give a different platform credit here. There, I need to send you. Did I send you that 30 for 30 podcast about the first ever UFC?
Mm-mm.
You got to listen to it.
Oh, I'd love
good.
To.
The story of the first
Jim Brown.
Ever UFC.
Jim Brown was on the broadcast of the original
UFC. They talk about
UFC.
How rough the broadcast was.
I've seen the YouTube.
The guy who did play-by-play lied. And it was just like, yeah, I can do this. And they were like, okay. And just flew him in.
Well, Bruce, what was it, Beck? Bruce Beck?
Isn't
that a name?
I don't remember.
New Jersey New York sportscaster. Beck. And then the other one, I'm pretty sure Brian Kilmeade from Fox News was on the original. I'll go back and look.
There's a lot of things. Can I talk about that for a second, too, if you were saying, like, I didn't. So, I didn't know Sean Hannity was, like, a radio disc jockey college guy before he did what he did. I did not know that Rush Limbaugh was, what, Jeff Christie?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Glenn Beck spun records.
I knew the Glenn Beck story, inside and out.
And Bill O'Reilly was a weatherman.
Yep.
He was a meteorologist. I don't even know if he was actually a certified meteorologist. I think he might have just been like, Bill, get on there and do
Bill that. O'Reilly, who you can now see once a week on the Cuomo show.
I can't speak to that, of course, as you know.
We'll be watching that together.
Yeah. But that's an interesting one. I had no idea these guys did all these things before they... I'm like, I'm a radio show host in Cleveland, and in 20 years, hopefully I'll be a radio show host in Cleveland. Like, that's the way... I'm like... All these other guys, they did all these other different things before they, like, Brian, I didn't know that. I didn't know Brian Kilmeade did that before he went to Fox. I had no idea.
If you go back, we should do it as a homework assignment. I'll tweet it out. The video to the first ever UFC, somebody has done all the editing to it so that there's sound effects, there are graphics to show just how bad this was because there were so many moments. Because I remember we rented it out. We had kind of heard about it, kind of like Cocaine Cowboys, the original, when people trading that on the streets.
We talked about this on this
all
podcast
around the country.
Before. Yeah, this concept.
Well, the UFC, you caught wind of it, that Denver, of all places, allowed this, because it was human cockfighting at that time. There, John McCain wanted to put an end to this, and they were trading around VHSs, and finally, there was a new movie store that opened up in Chesterland, and everything was a dollar. And they had the first two UFCs. They were just there. And I'm like, oh, my God, I've heard about the UFC. I've got to get this. So I took it home. And, I mean, I was young. I couldn't believe that, guys, I thought somebody was going to die. Because nobody knew how to defend themselves. It was one technique against another technique. Mm-hmm. Now that's gone. Everybody in the UFC They train different amounts, but they train the grappling, the jujitsu, the kickboxing. They back then they didn't. The whole point of the UFC was to say, hey, this karate guy who won't shut up about his discipline, he's going to go up against the kuksu guy who won't shut up about his discipline, who's going to go up against they even had a sumo wrestler, basically, in the ring. And then you realize, oh, yeah, no, it's just jiu-jitsu guy. Jiu-jitsu guy wins every time.
By the way, I know we have a big story going on with DeMar Hamlin. Mm-hmm. If it were any other week, anything else is going on, speaking of what you're talking about, Dana White got to go. Bye.
Okay, are you going to tell him?
Bye.
You going to tell him?
I mean,
he ain't going anywhere.
I understand that.
So much money for his partners.
What is there? Well, okay, we did this with Vince McMahon how many different times?
Yeah.
What is their status? Like, if an NFL owner got caught on camera doing that, could you imagine?
But the other owners have power. Who else has power?
That's what why I'm asking you, because I'm like, Dana White got to go. I'm like, well, who's going to make him go?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Endeavor.
Who owns the UFC?
This company, Endeavor, I don't know if they're private equity or what. They also rep Stephen A. Smith, apparently. This is big, big money. And
Stephen A.
They bought the UFC, and everybody wondered when they bought the UFC, what's going to happen. They bought it from the brothers, the Fertitta brothers. They bought it from the billionaire Fertitta brothers, and then everyone's like, oh, what is Dana White going to do? And they're like, oh, no, we're bringing in Dana White. He's the guy that is the reason the UFC is what it is. We are taking his expertise, and we are bringing him on.
But you're on camera slapping your wife around, dude. You can't do that. That's bad. I'm not putting you in a position to defend that. I know that.
I know. I'm just saying, who's going to make them? You'd have to have, like, congressional hearings.
Make him defend it.
But yeah, right.
The guy that said, lose your kid at Disney World.
Okay,
come on.
But if you were Endeavor, wouldn't you, like, if it were any
other... Do you want to be associated with that?
I'm serious. If it were any other week, would we not have the 24-hour news cycle and people up on desk going, how can this be representative?
Right. So the only
way... talking about a sport, MMA, you don't want that going... I mean, there would be people outraged over that.
So the only way it would happen, who are the biggest UFC sponsors? The sponsors are the ones.
Clearly, yeah.
What beer company right now? I'm looking. No, complete list.
Let's not name names.
I won't. But one of them is a television network. Another one is a gambling network. Okay, if these people, you're looking at that one, there's four letters in that one. You think they're going to do it, Kenny? That motor company?
Maybe they should. Anyway.
There's another one. So a group called That is going to step in.
If they get involved.
This group has probably contributed more to what he did than anybody else.
Well, I just think that.
This is where we need video. Oh, yeah, Kenny, that company's going to do it?
I would say yes.
No,
wouldn't
they won't.
Say yes? Wouldn't you want out of there? What is that? Oh, come on. For crying out loud.
But anyway, it would be the sponsors. It would have to be the sponsors. And who would put pressure on the sponsors? It would have to be all the networks. But the networks are in bed with the UFC. One in particular, it's very powerful. So you be the judge. I mean, notice the one network has been very quiet about it. It was only Stephen A. Smith that has said anything. And he's friends with Dana White. He's friends. He said... Full disclosure, I'm friends with Dana White.
What did he say had to be done?
He said they just have to suspend him. Okay. It's like suspending an NFL owner.
I don't know how you suspend him.
What does that do?
Yeah, it was the same thing when we talked about Steve Ross.
Like Dana White's not going to take every phone call.
We didn't get to get into any of the conversation we were going to get into, by the way. We were going to talk about whether or not if you had a son, since you have the access to coaches, could your son get coached up and go... Like, say your son wanted to play football.
Knowing what a bad athlete I am.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With your genes, could the right amount of coaching make your son a starter at Bay Village High School and, like, get him to D2 college football?
I've thought about this so much. I've thought about this so much in all sorts of sports.
So our buddy Joe runs a academy now.
Mm-hmm. Like, NBA is the one where nobody's kids could just get to the NBA with the right amount of coaching.
Well, I'm not talking about pros. I said D2 for crying out loud.
Yeah, well, it's different levels.
Yeah.
Obviously,
to be a starter at Bay Village High School and go to D2, absolutely his kid could be coached up to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, there's certain positions that, like, if your son's not 6'3", 250, then he's not going to be on the fringe line, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's just not happening. They're not going to put Anthony Lima Jr. at 5'11", 135 on the D-line.
Well, like, I've said, like, kicker, punter, but they do have kicker, punter camps. They're loaded with a bunch of kids.
The kid
There's
from
a bunch
my
of them
town,
that don't go anywhere.
The kid from my town 2 years ago spent his weekends flying to Tampa to do kicking stuff. Now, the kid from Avon just kicked in the Arizona Bowl.
Arizona Bowl, that's right.
And as a true freshman, and is killing it out there, and that kid could kick too. But the Avon Lake kid from 2 years ago took a whole year off and then got signed by Akron after taking a whole year off. And that's just by going and getting the coaching. But he flew across the country to do it. And this was while he was still in school.
Well, this is the guys. This is what we talked about with a lot of the Olympic sports, a lot of the crazy Olympic sports. It's just a bunch of rich kids.
Yeah,
it's just. I'm sorry, it's just a bunch of rich kids.
Okay, but let's go team sports. Team sports we pay attention to. Let's go D1.
Okay,
D1 MAC, or you want to go as low as
no
like
go MAC
FCS
go MAC. Stick
okay,
with the MAC. We know the MAC.
Lowest is MAC. No offense, Youngstown State. We got to go with the MAC. Football. All three of us. You look at us. You look at our kids.
My kids, no. No.
No.
You don't think yours could?
Not football in the MAC.
Okay.
Just based on my oldest son and the size that he is right now, he should be developing into a certain size, and I just don't.
There are undersized linebackers all over the MAC.
Yeah.
All over.
Well, I haven't seen them up 5'11", close and personal.
5'11", but 215, I've seen it.
Go ahead, Owen, what do you
say?
Man,
I just don't know that to make it just to the MAC is worth all of that it would take.
It's a lot of work.
Well,
it's a full-time job.
Every program
like
needs
I said,
those.
I know a kid right now that's going to be a D1, high-level D1 kid. I know it because the way he's built.
Yeah.
At his age. But it's because the way he's built. If he wasn't 6'5", 265, 15-year-old right now, he wouldn't be getting those opportunities. As good as I think, as smart of a football kid as I know he is, he wouldn't be getting those opportunities without his physical size. The kid's dad is 6'8 and about 350-something. So I know he's going to pan out.
Axel's lanky. Jonas, I don't know about Jonah.
I don't know. I look
Jonah,
at you.
Jonah's a little voluptuous.
I look
I don't
at
know
you.
How Jonah's going to work out.
And you being 17 and taking care of him, of yourself.
I did.
With the right coaching, you could have went to a MAC school.
Did I ever tell you the Maslin story?
No, I don't know.
Just like the Bowling Green football
story? Is this where
you
tomahawk chop off of the...
This is... Hey, I know we just talked about swearing to God last week, or on Tuesday. I will take this to my grave. To my grave. And I got buddies from back home, and they'll listen. I had one buddy from back home who had coaches in his living room over this sort of thing. So... I really shouldn't be out there with this because high school football.
I think you have told me this.
I've told you this. I have not said this on any platform or whatever. Mm. Maslin takes their football very seriously.
You don't say.
Very seriously. And I worked at a pizza shop when I was very young. I was 14 years old working at a pizza shop. I was freshman football. And one day, there used to be like a restaurant, a restaurant area in the pizza shop. So one day there's these guys, and they're coaches, they're football coaches, and they're wearing Maslin stuff. And this is, again, this is late 90s. And they're done eating, and I'm working back in the kitchen, whatever. And I'm getting their stuff, and I'm putting their stuff away. On my mother, on my dead mother, okay, on my children, on whatever, I swear to you, you give me a lie detector, I don't care.
I'll bring it in.
And one guy looks at me and goes, I know who you are. And I go, oh, yeah? He goes, yeah, you're Kenny Carman. And I'm like, yeah, hi, nice to meet you. You know, I'm a freshman. I'm going into my freshman year. And he goes, yeah, you look really strong. He looks me up and down. He goes, you look really strong. He goes, you don't play much, do you? And I go, no. He goes, if you come to Maslin, you could play. And I go, no. He goes, you want to keep playing at Perry? I was like, well, yeah, I swear to God, I said, yeah, I love Perry. He goes, yeah, you're not going to play at Perry. You'd play at Maslin, and then you'd probably play in the MAC. And I like laughed. He goes, oh, you should seriously think about it. And he's like, he told me his name. I'm not going to tell you guys his name. And that was it. I was shocked.
So why?
Anthony, I was not good. But he goes, but in his eyes, so he's like, I'll make him good.
You were
but
being they coached are
factory
poorly.
School.
They in their way were taking a swing at my coach, and my coach was a legend.
Yeah, yeah, of course
and,
he is.
And his assistants, who were also very good assistant coaches at that time, and they in their own eyes were like, I'm just going to take another one of their kids, and they can go bitching up a storm.
Because the worst,
and even though my coach probably wouldn't even care,
the worst
my coach
thing that
cared.
Happens for them, though,
what?
The worst thing that happens for them in taking that swing is that you go back and you go, coach, guess what happened? And even if for, you know, the smallest of an inch of thought that your coach has put into his mind that these guys are talking to my boys, they've won.
That's exactly.
And they've Walter Whited, this is how I
for
win.
For all I know, he could have been like, I wasn't talking to that kid. I have no idea what that crazy a-hole was saying. That could be true. But that is also a thought where I look at it with coaches now, and I see any kid who has, like, size and strength. And we go to some places that got some really good staff, some really impressive coaching staffs. Like, I stood on the sideline at Ed's. Ed's goes without saying.
Right.
They got dudes. They got studs, football players. Like, there's boys, and then there's men, and there's dudes, and they got dudes. But their coaches are just as impressive. And Ed's has that type of program. Maslin does have that type of program. And there's other programs. Walsh Jesuit has a great, great program. I really got to tell you, it's my hometown. I get that. Or it's not my hometown. I should say I live in Streetsboro. I notice the way coaches carry themselves. I notice the way they stalk up and down the sideline, their assistant coaches and how they carry themselves.
Yep.
I tend to notice guys who are actually coaching and not just screaming. I came away with McKinley. They had a great second half run, Canton McKinley. I sat there and I watched those coaches on that sideline that entire game against Menor. I go, they're in a good place. They're going to be in a good place. Doing. And so I look at them and I go, if you got the right coaching staff, you see a kid with any size, like that kid can be helped. And then I go to some of the other places and I'm going, I want to take this kid and steal him
and get him out of there
right now and take him to one of these other schools that I just talked about. Because I'm looking at a kid who's got size, who maybe not be playing, and I go, is it because you're not playing and you're not motivated enough? Do you not have it? Or maybe you just don't have it. I don't think I had it. I had good coaches. But that guy, I'll take that story to my grave. It was one of the weirdest things ever. I was 14 years old. Weird as hell. Weirdest thing I've ever been through in my life. No, not the weirdest thing I've ever been through in my life, but as a football
player. At 14 years old,
I went through some weird stuff at 14.
Besides the drug smuggling.
I'll tell you this. Garrett said, I'll leave you guys with this. Garrett had said people are who they are at 13 years old, and I texted Garrett while we were talking to Garrett Bush and go, I don't know, man. I smoked a lot of weed when I was 13 years old. We don't condone that.